Richard Spur here, 19 minutes to Twiggy, and I've been telling you about this all morning and can't wait to bring you what is for me an incredibly original story. A blindfolded man is going to be sitting in Derby City Centre in silence for 7 hours a day for the next 2 weeks. He won't talk to anyone or even eat or drink. He's starting at 11 o'clock this morning, so this is his final supper. His name is Piers Starr, which is a great name in itself, and he's with you now. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm very well indeed. In your own words, tell me exactly what you're doing and why.
Okay, so basically I have deaf parents, and my first language was British Sign Language. I didn't actually learn to speak until I was three, so for the 3 years of my life, obviously I was using sign language. And I think as I've grown up, I've become sort of acutely aware that when I'm hearing, I'm also listening through my eyes. So I've never really actually experienced what it's like just to listen and actually just hear. And what I've also realized is actually my parents seem to appreciate my hearing more than I do. So actually for me to understand actually how, I suppose, fortunate I am, the fact that I can hear and obviously they can't, I think this is kind of quite apt, really.
That's a really interesting dynamic, isn't it? And so obviously both parents profoundly deaf. How did your speech develop then? You said it, you were three before you could speak. Where did you take your model from for your speech?
So I actually went to nursery, and that's where I learned how to speak. And I think for my parents, up to that point, obviously I was using sign language. So to go from using sign language then to go into society and actually learn how to speak, that was when I was three. So when I got to four, my mum actually took me to the phone box for the first time. And actually, when I was at the phone box, I made my first call. And that was the first time that actually had translated for my mum. So for her, that was, I think, she must have been completely amazed at the fact that actually her son is able to communicate for her. And then I kind of adopted this role of actually being her ears. So that's why I say I think she appreciated my ears more than I did. So from four, pretty much up until I got to sort of like college to university, it was then that actually I left the family home. And obviously by that point, my mum had sign language interpreters. Interpreters was quite a new thing. Back then, there weren't interpreters. So actually...
When are we talking, roughly?
We're talking like in the 90s. They didn't really have interpreters. It was always a social worker, and the social worker came at allotted time in the week. So there was all that sort of free time where my mum needed communication support but didn't actually have that support. So... that's why I think it was really, I suppose, for her, a great thing that she had a son that could actually hear.
What a profound responsibility, Piers, to, in a sense, be your parents' proxy sense. I mean, did that burden fall quite heavy on your shoulders, particularly at a young age?
I think it was, I think you don't know any different. I think actually when you get older and you talk to other kids and you learn about their experiences of being a kid, I think actually it does become quite profound. And actually you do realise actually as you get older that wow, you know, that was a massive responsibility, but, you know, it makes me who I am, you know, so I have no sort of disappointments or anything like that. You know, I'm quite proud of the fact that I come from this culture that is completely, I suppose, unique. And I think actually during my time at school, I did actually recognize the differences, because at home we have a very touchy-feely sort of communication, and also we're pointing and things like that. But in school, actually, to touch or to actually point, I mean, that was considered, you know,
a bit rude, yeah.
Rude or inappropriate. Yeah. You can't touch other kids. I mean, So I think that's kind of, for me, it's really interesting, this dynamic between the hearing world and also the deaf world, and how different that really is.
I find it fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I can see now your motivations, but I'm still not quite sure why you're going to be sitting. I mean, this is quite a thing. I mean, you know, some people would consider this a form of torture. 7 hours a day with a blindfold on, it sounds like the sort of thing that, you know, would happen if you were captured by spies, doesn't it?
Well, I'm basically studying fine art at university, and prior to that, I was actually doing a BA in photography. And 10 years ago, actually, I was an actor. So I've always been a performer, and sort of like when I was younger, I always felt as though I was in an involuntary performance, because obviously you'd walk down the street and people would stare and they'd be like, you know, because obviously you're using sign language, and it actually you didn't have control over that. You couldn't say, well, you know, don't sign, because actually that's the form of communication that my parents use. So actually performance, I think, is quite inherent in me. And as I got older, I became an actor, and then I kind of left that behind, and I started to sort of meddle with sort of video and photography, and started to embark on a photography degree. But during that period when I was doing the photography degree, I realized actually all of the photographs that I was making were still, they still had a performative sort of element to them. And I was trying to sort of find a way to make photography a performance, because it's seen as actually something that documents things.
Static,
or records.
Yeah.
So I think I'd gone from sort of trying to do that, and then I realised actually performance is something actually it's inherent in me. I mean, you have to be here and you have to be now, and it's exactly this, and people have to be with you in order to experience it. And it's the same as actually having deaf parents. You know, you have to be here and you have to be now, and your parents have to be there also for you to communicate. So performance art, there's such a parallel with my experience of being a child of deaf parents.
And what do you think you'll get out of it? What are you hoping to come away with after this, you know, this sensory deprivation that you're doing? It's at the spot, isn't it?
It is. I actually performed my first night last night. So, and that was for 3 hours. And actually that was because there was a launch for the event. And it was a great sort of warm up to get in and sort of actually experience what I will be doing for the next 2 weeks. And already it's been incredibly profound. You know, the sort of experience I'm actually getting from that, on many levels, you know, somebody came in and actually played music into my ears yesterday, and actually the music that they were playing me had no bass line or anything like that. So it really epitomized this idea of my parents actually not being able to hear, and actually me being able to hear. And actually it was actually an amazing moment. Actually, I kind of felt very emotional about that, actually, to be quite honest with you. And then at the end of this track, actually, there were birds tweeting. And then again, that made me think of my parents and the fact that they actually couldn't even hear the birds. So, you know, I mean, these are the kind of things, actually, I feel that will come out of the performance as we go along.
You're making me quite emotional, actually. I just think this is incredibly brave and an intelligent sort of thing to do in terms of, you know, emotional intelligence. What time will you be there, and can we sort of come up and touch you, or how does it
absolutely
work?
Yeah, do please come. Unfortunately, I've asked for people not to touch me, because actually I'm quite vulnerable in the space. So and the whole point of it is actually about listening. So for me to be touched, actually, kind of that falls into the territory of obviously my family life, and the fact that we touch, and actually I'm trying to get away from that whole aspect. I kind of want to just focus on the hearing aspect. So yeah, by all means, I'm more than happy for people to come into the space and maybe come and chat to me. Obviously, I'm not going to be responding, but that's the whole point. You know, I think we're of a culture now where we don't actually listen to each other in society. And actually, by me sort of taking away the fact that actually I'm not going to be speaking to these people, it means that actually they've got room to actually say whatever they want.
Well, I think it's going to be so interesting, both for you and for those that watch you. Do come back when you've finished, won't you, and tell us just how it's all gone after the end of this period. Let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be more than happy to do that.
So 11 o'clock then today, yeah?
Yeah.
All right. I might come and see you.
Amazing.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Lovely to talk to you. Pia Starr there with another great story on BBC Radio Derby.
The Breakfast Show with Ian Skye.